down the street, drawing more onlookers into the party. What are they celebrating?
A funeral, Anubis said. They've just put the deceased in his tomb. Now they're cutting the body loose. The mourners celebrate the dead one's life with song and dance as they escort the empty hearse away from the cemetery. Very Egyptian, this ritual.
How do you know so much?
I'm the god of funerals. I know every death custom in the world. How to die properly, how to prepare the body and soul for the afterlife. I live for death.
You must be fun at parties, I said. Why have you brought me here?
To talk.
He spread his hands, and the nearest tomb rumbled. A long white ribbon shot out of a crack in the wall. The ribbon just kept coming, weaving itself into some kind of shape next to Anubis, and my first thought was, my God, he's got a magic roll of toilet paper. Then I realized it was cloth, a length of white linen wrappings, mummy wrappings. The cloth twisted itself into the form of a bench, and Anubis sat down.
I don't like Horus. He gestured for me to join him. He's loud and arrogant and thinks he's better than me. But Isis always treated me like a son. I crossed my arms.
You're not my son. And I told you I'm not Isis.
Anubis tilted his head. No, you don't act like a godling. You remind me of your mother.
That hit me like a bucket of cold water, and sadly I knew exactly what that felt like, thanks to Zia.
You've met my mother?
Anubis blinked, as if realizing he'd done something wrong. I know all the dead, but each spirit's path is secret. I should not have spoken.
You can't just say something like that and then clam up. Is she in the Egyptian afterlife? Did she pass your little hall of judgment?
Anubis glanced uneasily at the golden scales, which shimmered like a mirage in the graveyard. It is not my hall. I merely oversee it until Lord Osiris returns. I'm sorry if I upset you, but I can't say anything more. I don't know why I said anything at all. It's just... Your soul has a similar glow, a strong glow.
How flattering, I grumbled. My soul glows.
I'm sorry, he said again. Please, sit.
I had no interest in letting the matter drop, or sitting with him on a bunch of mummy wrappings, but my direct approach to information gathering didn't seem to be working. I plopped down on the bench and tried to look as annoyed as possible. So, I gave him a sulky glare. What's that form, then? Are you a godling? He frowned and put his hand to his chest.
You mean, am I inhabiting a human body? No. I can inhabit any graveyard, any place of death or mourning. This is my natural appearance.
Oh. Part of me had hoped there was an actual boy sitting next to me, someone who just happened to be hosting a god. But I should have known that was too good to be true. I felt disappointed. Then I felt angry with myself for feeling disappointed. It's not like there was any potential, Sadie, I chided myself. He's the bloody god of funerals. He's like 5,000 years old. So, I said, if you can't tell me anything useful, at least help me. We need a feather of truth. He shook his head.
You don't know what you're asking. The feather of truth is too dangerous. Giving it to a mortal would be against the rules of Osiris.
But Osiris isn't here. I pointed at the empty throne. That's his seat, isn't it? Do you see Osiris?
Anubis eyed the throne.
He ran his fingers along his gold chain as if it were getting tighter.
It's true that I've waited here for ages, keeping my station. I was not imprisoned like the rest. I don't know why, but I did the best I could. When I heard the five had been released, I hoped Lord Osiris would return, but...
He shook his head dejectedly.
Why would he neglect his duties?
Probably because he's trapped inside my dad. Anubis stared at me.
The baboon did not explain this.
Well, I can't explain as well as a baboon, but basically my dad wanted to release some gods for reasons I don't quite... Maybe he thought, I'll just pop down to the British Museum and blow up the Rosetta Stone, and he released Osiris, but he also got Set and the rest of that lot.
So Set imprisoned your father while he was hosting Osiris?
Anubis said, which means Osiris has also been trapped by my... He stopped himself. By Set. Interesting, I thought.
You understand, then, I said. You've got to help us.
Anubis hesitated, then shook his head. I can't. I'll get in trouble.
I just stared at him and laughed. I couldn't help it. He sounded so ridiculous. You'll get in trouble? How old are you, 16? You're a god!
It was hard to tell in the dark, but I could swear he blushed.
You don't understand. The feather cannot abide the smallest lie. If I gave it to you, and you spoke a single untruth while you carried it, or acted in a way that was not truthful, you would burn to ashes.
You're assuming I'm a liar.
He blinked.
No, I simply...
You've never told a lie? What were you about to say just now about Set? He's your father, I'm guessing. Is that it?
Anubis closed his mouth, then opened it again.
He looked as if he wanted to get angry, but couldn't quite remember how.
Are you always this infuriating?
Usually more, I admitted.
Why hasn't your father married you off to someone far, far away?
He asked as if it were an honest question, and now it was my turn to be flabbergasted. Excuse me, Death Boy, but I'm 12. Well, almost 13, and a very mature almost 13, but that's not the point. We don't marry off girls in my family, and you may know everything about funerals, but apparently you aren't very up to speed on courtship rituals.
Anubis looked mystified.
Apparently not.
Right. Wait, what were we talking about? Oh, thought you could distract me, eh? I remember. Set's your father, yes? Tell the truth.
Anubis gazed across the graveyard. The sound of the jazz funeral was fading into the streets of the French Quarter.
Yes, he said. At least that's what the legends say. I've never met him. My mother, Nephthys, gave me to Osiris when I was a child.
She gave you away?
She said she didn't want me to know my father, but in truth, I'm not sure she knew what to do with me. I wasn't like my cousin Horus. I wasn't a warrior. I was a different child.
He sounded so bitter, I didn't know what to say. I mean, I'd asked for the truth, but usually you don't actually get it, especially from guys. I also knew something about being the different child and feeling like my parents had given me away. Maybe your mum was trying to protect you, I said, your dad being the Lord of Evil and all.
Maybe,
he said half-heartedly.
Osiris took me under his wing. He made me the Lord of Funerals, the Keeper of the Ways of Death. It's a good job, but... You asked how old I am? The truth is, I don't know. Years don't pass in the land of the dead. I still feel quite young, but the world has gotten old around me... And Osiris has been gone so long. He's the only family I had.
Looking at Anubis in the dim light of the graveyard, I saw a lonely teenage guy. I tried to remind myself that he was a god, thousands of years old, probably able to control vast powers well beyond magic toilet paper, but I still felt sorry for him. "Help us rescue my dad," I said. "We'll send Set back to the Duat, and Osiris will be free. We'll all be happy."
Anubis shook his head again.
"I told you, your scales are broken," I noticed. "That's because Osiris isn't here, I'm guessing. What happens to all the souls that come for judgment?"
I knew I'd hit a nerve. Anubis shifted uncomfortably on the bench.
"It increases chaos. The souls become confused. Some cannot go to the afterlife. Some manage, but they must find other ways. I try to help, but the Hall of Judgment is also called the Hall of Mart. It is meant to be the center of order, a stable foundation. Without Osiris, it is falling into disrepair, crumbling.
Then what are you waiting for? Give us the feather, unless you're afraid your dad will ground you.
His eyes flashed with irritation.
For a moment I thought he was planning my funeral, but he simply sighed in exasperation.
"I do a ceremony called the Opening of the Mouth. It lets the soul of the dead person come forth. For you, Sadie Kane, I would invent a new ceremony. The closing of the mouth. Ha ha, are you going to give me the feather or not?
He opened his hand. There was a burst of light, and a glowing feather floated above his palm, a snowy plume like a writing quill.
For Osiris's sake. But I will insist on several conditions. First, only you may handle it. Well, of course, you don't think I'd let Carter. Also, you must listen to my mother, Nephthys, Khufu told me you were looking for her. If you manage to find her, listen to her.
Easy, I said, though the request did leave me strangely uncomfortable. Why would Anubis ask something like that?
And before you go, Anubis continued, you must answer three questions for me as you hold the feather of truth, to prove that you are honest.
My mouth suddenly felt dry. What sort of questions?
Any that I want. And remember, the slightest lie will destroy you.
Give me the bloody feather. As he handed it to me, the feather stopped glowing, but it felt warmer and heavier than a feather should.
It's the tail feather from a Bennu, Anubis explained, what you'd call a phoenix. It weighs exactly the same as a human soul. Are you ready?
No, I said, which must have been truthful, as I didn't burn up. Does that count as one question?
Anubis actually smiled, which was quite dazzling. I suppose it does. You bargain like a Phoenician sea trader, Sadie Kane. Second question, then. Would you give your life for your brother?
Yes, I said immediately.
I know. It surprised me, too. But holding the feather forced me to be truthful. Obviously, it didn't make me any wiser.
Anubis nodded, apparently not surprised.
Final question. If it means saving the world, are you prepared to lose your father?
That's not a fair question.
Answer it honestly.
How could I answer something like that? It wasn't a simple yes, no. Of course, I knew the right answer. The heroine is supposed to refuse to sacrifice her father. Then she boldly goes off and saves her dad and the world, right? But what if it really was one or the other? The whole world was an awfully large place. Gran and Gramps, Carter, Uncle Amos, Bast, Khufu, Liz and Emma, everyone I'd ever known. What would my dad say if I chose him instead? If there really was no other way, I said, no other way at all. Oh, come off, it's a ridiculous question, the feather began to glow. All right, I relented. If I had to, then I suppose I would save the world. Horrible guilt crushed down on me. What kind of daughter was I? I clutched the Ta'it amulet on my necklace, my one remembrance of Dad. I know some of you lot will be thinking, you hardly ever saw your dad, you barely knew him, why would you care so much? But that didn't make him any less my dad, did it? Or the thought of losing him forever any less horrible? And the thought of failing him, of willingly choosing to let him die, even to save the world? What sort of awful person was I? I could barely meet Anubis's eyes, but when I did, his expression softened.
I believe you, Sadie.
Oh, really? I'm holding the bloody feather of truth, and you believe me? Well, thanks.
The truth is harsh, Anubis said. Spirits come to the Hall of Judgment all the time, and they cannot let go of their lies. They deny their faults, their true feelings, their mistakes, right up until Amit devours their souls for eternity. It takes strength and courage to admit the truth.
Yeah, I feel so strong and courageous. Thanks.
Anubis stood. I should leave you now. You're running out of time. In just over 24 hours, the sun will rise on Set's birthday, and he will complete his pyramid, unless you stop him. Perhaps, when next we meet,
you'll be just as annoying, I guessed. He fixed me with those warm brown eyes.
Or perhaps you could bring me up to speed on modern courtship rituals.
I sat there stunned until he gave me a glimpse of a smile, just enough to let me know he was teasing.
Then he disappeared. "Oh, very funny," I yelled. The scales and the throne vanished. The linen bench unraveled and dumped me in the middle of the graveyard. Carter and Hufu appeared next to me, but I just kept yelling at the spot where Anubis had stood, calling him some choice names. "What's going on?" Carter demanded. "Where are we?"
"He's horrible," I growled. "Self-important, sarcastic, incredibly hot, insufferable."
"Ugh," Hufu complained. "Yeah," Carter agreed. "Did you get the feather or not?"
I held out my hand, and there it was, a glowing white plume floating above my fingers. I closed my fist, and it disappeared again.
"Whoa," Carter said. "But what about Anubis? How did you—"
"Let's find Bast and get out of here," I interrupted. "We've got work to do." And I marched out of the graveyard before he could ask me more questions, because I was in no mood to tell the truth.
29. Zia sets a rendezvous.
"Yeah, thanks a lot, Sadie. You get to tell the part about the land of the dead. I get to describe Interstate 10 through Texas. Long story short, it took forever and was totally boring, unless your idea of fun is watching cows graze. We left New Orleans about 1 a.m. on December 28th, the day before Set planned to destroy the world. Bast had borrowed an RV, a FEMA leftover from Hurricane Katrina. At first, Bast suggested taking a plane, but after I told her about my dream of the magicians on the exploding flight, we agreed planes might not be a good idea. The sky goddess Nut had promised us safe air travel as far as Memphis, but I didn't want to press our luck the closer we got to Set.
"Set is not our only problem," Bast said. "If your vision is correct, the magicians are closing in on us. And not just any magicians. Desjardins himself."
"And Zia," Sadie put in, just to annoy me. In the end, we decided it was safer to drive, even though it was slower. With luck, we'd make Phoenix just in time to challenge Set. As for the House of Life, all we could do was hope to avoid them while we did our job. Maybe once we dealt with Set, the magicians would decide we were cool. Maybe. I kept thinking about Desjardins, wondering if he really could be a host for Set. A day ago, it had made perfect sense. Desjardins wanted to crush the Kane family. He hated our dad, and he hated us. He'd probably been waiting for decades, even centuries, for Iskandar to die, so he could become Chief Lector. Power, anger, arrogance, ambition. Desjardins had it all. If Set was looking for a soulmate, literally, he couldn't do much better. And if Set could start a war between the gods and magicians by controlling the Chief Lector, the only winner would be the forces of chaos. Besides, Desjardins was an easy guy to hate. Somebody had sabotaged Amos's house and alerted Set that Amos was coming. But the way Desjardins saved all those people on the plane, that just didn't seem like something the Lord of Evil would do. Bast and Hufu took turns driving while Sadie and I dozed off and on. I didn't know baboons could drive recreational vehicles, but Hufu did okay. When I woke up around dawn, he was navigating through early morning rush hour in Houston, baring his fangs and barking a lot, and none of the other drivers seemed to notice anything out of the ordinary. For breakfast, Sadie, Bast, and I sat in the RV's kitchen while the cabinets banged open and the dishes clinked and miles of nothing went by outside. Bast had snagged us some snacks and drinks, and Friskies, of course, from a New Orleans all-night convenience store before we left, but nobody seemed very hungry. I could tell Bast was anxious. She'd already shredded most of the RV's upholstery and was now using the kitchen table as a scratching post. As for Sadie, she kept opening and closing her hand, staring at the feather of truth as if it were a phone she wished would ring. Ever since her disappearance in the Hall of Judgment, she'd been acting all distant and quiet. Not that I'm complaining, but it wasn't like her. "What happened with Anubis?" I asked her for the millionth time. She glared at me, ready to bite my head off. Then she apparently decided I wasn't worth the effort. She fixed her eyes on the glowing feather that hovered over her palm.
"We talked," she said carefully.
He asked me some questions. What kind of questions? Carter, don't ask, please.
Please? Okay, that really wasn't like Sadie. I looked at Bast, but she wasn't any help. She was slowly gouging the formica to bits with her claws. What's wrong? I asked her. She kept her eyes on the table.
In the land of the dead, I abandoned you. Again.
Anubis startled you, I said. It's no big deal. Bast gave me the big yellow eyes, and I got the feeling I'd only made things worse.
I made a promise to your father, Carter. In exchange for my freedom, he gave me a job even more important than fighting the serpent, protecting Sadie, and if it ever became necessary, protecting both of you.
Sadie flushed. Bast, that's... I mean, thank you and all, but we're hardly more important than fighting, you know, him.
You don't understand, Bast said. The two of you are not just blood of the pharaohs. You're the most powerful royal children to be born in centuries. You're the only chance we have of reconciling the gods in the House of Life, of relearning the old ways before it's too late. If you could learn the path of the gods, you could find others with royal blood and teach them. You could revitalize the House of Life. What your parents did, everything they did, was to prepare the way for you.
Sadie and I were silent. I mean, what do you say to something like that? I guessed I'd always felt like my parents loved me, but willing to die for me? Believing it was necessary so Sadie and I could do some amazing world-saving stuff? I didn't ask for that.
They didn't want to leave you alone, Bast said, reading my expression. They didn't plan on it, but they knew releasing the gods would be dangerous. Believe me, they understood how special you are. At first, I was protecting you two because I promised. Now, even if I hadn't promised, I would. You two are like kittens to me. I won't fail you again.
I'll admit, I got a lump in my throat. I'd never been called someone's kitten before. Sadie sniffled. She brushed something from under her eye. You're not going to wash us, are you? It was good to see Bast smile again.
I'll try to resist. And by the way, Sadie, I'm proud of you. Dealing with Anubis on your own. Those death gods can be nasty customers.
Sadie shrugged. She seemed strangely uncomfortable.
Well, I wouldn't call him nasty. I mean, he looked hardly more than a teenager.
What are you talking about? I said. He had the head of a jackal.
No, when he turned human.
Sadie. I was starting to get worried about her now. When Anubis turned human, he still had the head of a jackal. He was huge and terrifying and, yeah, pretty nasty. Why, what did he look like to you?
Her cheeks reddened. He looked like a mortal guy. Probably a glamour, Bast said.
No, Sadie insisted. It couldn't have been. Well, it's not important, I said. We got the feather. Sadie fidgeted, as if it was very important. But then she closed her fist, and the feather of truth disappeared.
It won't do us any good without the secret name of Set. I'm working on that.
Bast's gaze shifted around the room. She seemed afraid of being overheard.
I've got a plan, but it's dangerous.
I sat forward. What is it?
We'll have to make a stop. I'd rather not jinx us until we get closer, but it's on our way. Shouldn't cause much of a delay.
I tried to calculate. This is the morning of the second demon day?
Bast nodded. The day Horus was born.
and Set's birthday is tomorrow, the third demon day. That means we have about 24 hours until he destroys North America. And if he gets his hands on us, Sadie added, he'll ramp up his power even more. It'll be enough time, Bast said. It's roughly 24 hours driving from New Orleans to Phoenix, and we've already been on the road over 5 hours. If we don't have any more nasty surprises...
Like the kind we have every day?
Yes, Bast admitted. Like those.
I took a shaky breath. 24 hours and it would be over, one way or the other. We'd save Dad and stop Set, or everything would have been for nothing. Not just what Sadie and I had done, but all our parents' sacrifices, too. Suddenly, I felt like I was underground again, in one of those tunnels in the first gnome, with a million tons of rock over my head. One little shift in the ground, and everything would come crashing down. Well, I said, if you need me, I'll be outside, playing with sharp objects. I grabbed my sword and headed for the back of the RV. I'd never seen a mobile home with a porch before. The sign on the back door warned me not to use it while the vehicle was in motion, but I did anyway. It wasn't the best place to practice sword play. It was too small, and two chairs took up most of the space. The cold wind whipped around me, and every bump in the road threw me off balance. But it was the only place I could go to be alone. I needed to clear my thoughts. I practiced summoning my sword from the duat and putting it back. Soon I could do it almost every time, as long as I kept my focus. Then I practiced some moves, blocks, jabs, and strikes, until Horace couldn't resist offering his advice. "Lift the blade higher," he coached. "More of an arc, Carter. The blade is designed to hook an enemy's weapon." "Shut up," I grumbled. "Where were you when I needed help on the basketball court?" But I tried holding the sword his way and found he was right. The highway wound through long stretches of empty scrubland. Once in a while, we'd pass a rancher's truck or a family SUV, and the driver would get wide-eyed when he saw me. A black kid swinging a sword on the back of an RV. I'd just smile and wave, and Hufu's driving soon left them in the dust. After an hour of practice, my shirt was stuck to my chest with cold sweat. My breathing was heavy. I decided to sit and take a break.
"It approaches," Horace told me. His voice sounded more substantial, no longer in my head. I looked next to me and saw him shimmering in a golden aura, sitting back in the other deck chair in his leather armor with his sandaled feet up on the railing. His sword, a ghostly copy of my sword, was propped next to him.
"What's approaching?" I asked. "The fight with Set?"
"That, of course," Horace said. "But there is another challenge before that, Carter. Be prepared."
"Great, as if I didn't have enough challenges already."
Horace's silver and gold eyes glittered.
"When I was growing up, Set tried to kill me many times. My mother and I fled from place to place, hiding from him until I was old enough to face him. The Red Lord will send the same forces against you. The next will come at a river," I guessed, remembering my last soul trip.
"Something bad is going to happen at a river. But what's the challenge?"
"You must beware." Horace's image began to fade, and the god frowned. "What's this? Someone is trying to...
A different force."
He was replaced by the glowing image of Zia Rashid.
"Zia!"
I stood up, suddenly conscious of the fact that I was sweaty and gross and looked like I'd just been dragged through the land of the dead.
"Carter."
Her image flickered. She was clutching her staff and wore a gray coat wrapped over her robes as if she were standing somewhere cold. Her short black hair danced around her face.
"Think Toth, I found you."
"How did you get here?"
"No time. Listen, we're coming after you. Desjardins... Me and two others. We don't know exactly where you are. Desjardins' tracking spells are having trouble finding you, but he knows we're getting close. And he knows where you're going. Phoenix."
My mind started racing. So he finally believes Set is free?
You're coming to help us?
Zia shook her head. He's coming to stop you.
Stop us? Zia, Set's about to blow up the continent. My dad...
My voice cracked. I hated how scared and powerless I sounded.
My dad's in trouble.
Zia reached out a shimmering hand, but it was just an image. Our fingers couldn't touch.
Carter, I'm sorry. You have to see Desjardins' point of view. The House of Life has been trying to keep the gods locked up for centuries to prevent something like this from happening. Now that you've unleashed them, it wasn't my idea. I know, but you're trying to fight Set with divine magic. Gods can't be controlled. You could end up doing even more damage. If you let the House of Life handle this, Set is too strong, I said. And I can control Horus. I can do this.
Zia shook her head. It will get harder as you get closer to Set. You have no idea.
And you do?
Zia glanced nervously to her left. Her image turned fuzzy like a bad television signal.
We don't have much time. Mel will be out of the restroom soon.
You've got a magician named Mel?
Just listen. Desjardins is splitting us into two teams. The plan is for us to cut you off on either side and intercept you. If my team reaches you first, I think I can keep Mel from attacking long enough for us all to talk. Then maybe we can figure out how to approach Desjardins, to convince him we have to cooperate.
Don't take this the wrong way, but why should I trust you?
She pursed her lips, looking genuinely hurt. Part of me felt guilty, while part of me worried this was some kind of trick.
Carter, I have something to tell you. Something that might help, but it has to be said in person.
Tell me now!
Toth's beak! You are impossibly stubborn.
Yeah, it's a gift. We locked eyes. Her image was fading, but I didn't want her to go. I wanted to talk longer.
If you won't trust me, I'll have to trust you, Zia said. I will arrange to be in Las Cruces, New Mexico, tonight. If you choose to meet me, perhaps we can convince Mel. Then together, we'll convince Desjardins. Will you come?
I wanted to promise, just to see her, but I imagined myself trying to convince Sadie or Bast that this was a good idea.
I don't know, Zia.
Just think about it, she pleaded. And Carter, don't trust Amos. If you see him...
Her eyes widened.
Mel's here, she whispered.
Zia slashed her staff in front of her, and her image vanished. 30. Bast keeps a promise. Hours later, I woke up on the RV's couch with Bast shaking my arm.
We're here, she announced.
I had no idea how long I'd been asleep. At some point, the flat landscape and complete boredom had zonked me out, and I'd started having bad dreams about tiny magicians flying around in my hair, trying to shave me bald. Somewhere in there, I'd had a nightmare about Amos, too, but it was fuzzy. I still didn't understand why Zia would mention him. I blinked the sleep out of my eyes and realized my head was in Hufu's lap. The baboon was foraging my scalp for munchies.
Dude. I sat up groggily. Not cool.
But he gave you a lovely hairdo, Sadie said.
Hufu agreed.
Bast opened the door of the trailer.
Come on, she said. We'll have to walk from here.
When I got to the door, I almost had a heart attack. We were parked on a mountain road so narrow, the RV would have toppled over if I'd sneezed wrong. For a second, I was afraid we were already in Phoenix, because the landscape looked similar. The sun was just setting on the horizon. Rugged mountain ranges stretched out on either side, and the desert floor between them seemed to go on forever. In a valley to our left lay a colorless city, hardly any trees or grass, just sand, gravel, and buildings. The city was much smaller than Phoenix, though, and a large river traced its southern edge, glinting red in the fading light. The river curved around the base of the mountains below us before snaking off to the north.
We're on the moon, Sadie murmured.
El Paso, Texas,
Bast corrected. And that's the Rio Grande.
She took a big breath of the cool, dry air.
A river civilization in the desert. Very much like Egypt, actually. Except for the fact that Mexico is next door. I think this is the best spot to summon Nephthys.
You really think she'll tell us Set's secret name? Sadie asked.
Bost considered.
Nephthys is unpredictable, but she has sided against her husband before. We can hope.
That didn't sound very promising. I stared at the river far below. Why did you park us on the mountain? Why not closer?
Bost shrugged, as if this hadn't occurred to her.
Cats like to get as high up as possible, in case we have to pounce on something.
Great, I said. So if we have to pounce, we're all set.
It's not so bad, Bost said. We just climb our way down to the river through a few miles of sand, cacti, and rattlesnakes, looking out for the border patrol, human traffickers, magicians, and demons, and summon Nephthys.
Sadie whistled. Well, I'm excited.
Ugh!
Hufu agreed miserably. He sniffed the air and snarled.
He smells trouble. Bost translated. Something bad is about to happen.
Even I could smell that, I grumbled, and we followed Bost down the mountain.
Yes, Horace said. I remember this place.
It's El Paso, I told him. Unless you went out for Mexican food, you've never been here.
I remember it well, he insisted. The marsh, the desert.
I stopped and looked around. Suddenly I remembered this place, too. About 50 yards in front of us, the river spread out into a swampy area, a web of slow-moving tributaries cutting a shallow depression through the desert. Marsh grass grew tall along the banks. There must have been some kind of surveillance, it's being an international border and all, but I couldn't spot any. I'd been here in Ba form. I could picture a hut right there in the marsh, Isis and young Horus hiding from Set. And just downriver, that's where I'd sensed something dark moving under the water, waiting for me. I caught Bast's arm when she was a few steps from the bank.
Stay away from the water.
She frowned.
Carter, I'm a cat. I'm not going for a swim. But if you want to summon a river goddess, you really need to do it at the riverbank.
She made it sound so logical that I felt stupid, but I couldn't help it. Something bad was about to happen.
What is it? I asked Horus. What's the challenge?
But my ride-along god was unnervingly silent, as if waiting. Sadie tossed a rock into the murky brown water. It sank with a loud kplunk.
Seems quite safe to me, she said, and trudged down to the banks.
Hufu followed hesitantly. When he reached the water, he sniffed at it and snarled.
See, I said, even Hufu doesn't like it.
It's probably ancestral memory, Bast said. The river was a dangerous place in Egypt. Snakes, hippos, all kinds of problems.
Hippos?
Don't take it lightly, Bast warned. Hippos can be deadly.
Was that what attacked Horus? I asked. I mean in the old days when Set was looking for him.
Haven't heard that story, Bost said. Usually you hear that Set used scorpions first, then later crocodiles.
Crocodiles, I said, and a chill went down my back.
Is that it? I asked Horus. But again, he didn't answer. Bost, does the Rio Grande have crocodiles?
I very much doubt it.
She knelt by the water.
Now, Sadie, if you'd do the honors.
How?
Just ask for Nephthys to appear. She was Isis's sister. If she's anywhere on this side of the Duat, she should hear your voice.
Sadie looked doubtful, but she knelt next to Bost and touched the water.
Her fingertips caused ripples that seemed much too large, rings of force emanating all the way across the river.
"Hello, Nephthys," she said. "Anyone home?"
I heard a splash downriver and turned to see a family of immigrants crossing midstream. I'd heard stories about how thousands of people cross the border from Mexico illegally each year, looking for work and a better life, but it was startling to actually see them in front of me, a man and a woman hurrying along, carrying a little girl between them. They were dressed in ragged clothes and looked poorer than the poorest Egyptian peasants I'd ever seen. I stared at them for a few seconds, but they didn't appear to be any kind of supernatural threat. The man gave me a wary look, and we seemed to come to a silent understanding. We both had enough problems without bothering each other. Meanwhile, Bost and Sadie stayed focused on the water, watching the ripples spread out from Sadie's fingers. Bost tilted her head, listening intently.
"What's she saying?"
"I can't make it out," Sadie whispered. "Very faint."
"You can actually hear something?" I asked.
"Shh,"
they both said at once.
"Caged,"
Sadie said.
"No, what is that word in English?"
"Sheltered," Bost suggested. "She is sheltered far away. A sleeping host. What is that supposed to mean?"
I didn't know what they were talking about. I couldn't hear a thing. Khufu tugged at my hand and pointed downriver.
"Ugh!"
The immigrant family had disappeared. It seemed impossible they could cross the river so quickly. I scanned both banks, no sign of them, but the water was more turbulent where they'd been standing, as if someone had stirred it with a giant spoon. My throat tightened. Bost?
"Carter, we can barely hear Nephthys," she said. "Please."
I gritted my teeth. "Fine. Khufu and I are going to check something."
"Shh,"
Sadie said again. I nodded to Khufu, and we started down the riverbank. Khufu hid behind my legs and growled at the river. I looked back, but Bost and Sadie seemed fine. They were still staring at the water as if it were some amazing internet video. Finally, we got to the place where I'd seen the family, but the water had calmed. Khufu slapped the ground and did a handstand, which meant he was either breakdancing or really nervous. "What is it?" I asked, my heart pounding.
Ugh,
he complained. That was probably an entire lecture in baboon, but I had no idea what he was saying. "Well, I don't see any other way," I said. "If that family got pulled into the water or something, I have to find them. I'm going in."
"Ugh!"
He backed away from the water. "Khufu, those people had a little girl. If they need help, I can't just walk away. Stay here and watch my back." Khufu grunted and slapped his own face in protest as I stepped into the water. It was colder and swifter than I'd imagined. I concentrated and summoned my sword and wand out of the duat. Maybe it was my imagination, but that seemed to make the river run even faster. I was midstream when Khufu barked urgently. He was jumping around on the riverbank, pointing frantically at a nearby clump of reeds. The family was huddled inside, trembling with fear, their eyes wide. My first thought, why are they hiding from me? "I won't hurt you," I promised. They stared at me blankly, and I wished I could speak Spanish. Then the water churned around me, and I realized they weren't scared of me. My next thought, man, I'm stupid. Horace's voice yelled, "Jump!" I sprang out of the water as if shot from a cannon, 20-30 feet into the air. No way I should have been able to do that, but it was a good thing because a monster erupted from the river beneath me. At first, all I saw were hundreds of teeth, a pink maw 3 times as big as me. Somehow I managed to flip and land on my feet in the shallows. I was facing a crocodile as long as our RV, and that was just the half sticking out of the water. Its gray-green skin was ridged with thick plates like a camouflage suit of armor, and its eyes were the color of moldy milk. The family screamed and started scrambling up the banks. That caught the crocodile's attention. He instinctively turned toward the louder, more interesting prey, I'd always thought of crocodiles as slow animals, but when it charged the immigrants, I'd never seen anything move so fast. "Use the distraction," Horace urged. "Get behind it and strike." Instead, I yelled, "Sadie, Bost, help!" and I threw my wand. Bad throw. The wand hit the river right in front of the croc, then skipped off the water like a stone, smacked the croc between the eyes, and shot back into my hand. I doubt I did any damage, but the croc glanced over at me, annoyed. "Or you can smack it with a stick," Horace muttered. I charged forward, yelling to keep the croc's attention. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see the family scrambling to safety. Hufu ran along behind them, waving his arms and barking to herd them out of harm's way. I wasn't sure if they were running from the croc or the crazy monkey, but as long as they kept running, I didn't care. I couldn't see what was happening with Bost and Sadie. I heard shouting and splashing behind me, but before I could look, the crocodile lunged. I ducked to the left, slashing with my sword. The blade just bounced off the croc's hide. The monster thrashed sideways, and its snout would have bashed my head in, but I instinctively raised my wand, and the croc slammed into a wall of force, bouncing off as if I were protected by a giant, invisible energy bubble. I tried to summon the falcon warrior, but it was too hard to concentrate with a 6-ton reptile trying to bite me in half. Then I heard Bost scream, "No!" And I knew immediately, without even looking, that something was wrong with Sadie. Desperation and rage turned my nerves to steel. I thrust out my wand and the wall of energy surged outward, slamming into the crocodile so hard it went flying through the air, tumbling out of the river and onto the Mexican shore. While it was on its back, flailing and off balance, I leaped, raising my sword, which was now glowing in my hands, and drove the blade into the monster's belly. I held on while the crocodile thrashed, slowly disintegrating from its snout to the tip of its tail until I stood in the middle of a giant pile of wet sand. I turned and saw Bost battling a crocodile just as big as mine. The crocodile lunged and Bost dropped beneath it, raking her knives across its throat. The croc melted into the river until it was only a smoky cloud of sand, but the damage had been done. Sadie lay in a crumpled heap on the riverbank. By the time I got there, Hufu and Bost were already at her side. Blood trickled from Sadie's scalp. Her face was a nasty shade of yellow. "What happened?" I asked.
"It came out of nowhere," Bost said miserably. "Its tail hit Sadie and sent her flying. She never had a chance. Is she..."
Hufu put his hand on Sadie's forehead and made popping noises with his mouth. Bost sighed with relief.
"Hufu says she'll live, but we have to get her out of here. Those crocodiles could mean..."
Her voice trailed off. In the middle of the river, the water was boiling. Rising from it was a figure so horrible, I knew we were doomed.
"Could mean that,"
Bost said grimly. To start with, the guy was 20 feet tall, and I don't mean with a glowing avatar. He was all flesh and blood. His chest and arms were human, but he had light green skin, and his waist was wrapped in a green armored kilt like reptile hide. He had the head of a crocodile, a massive mouth filled with white crooked teeth, and eyes that glistened with green mucus. Yeah, I know, real attractive. His black hair hung in plaits down to his shoulders, and bull's horns curved from his head. If that wasn't weird enough, he appeared to be sweating at an unbelievable rate. Oily water poured off him in torrents and pooled in the river. He raised his staff, a length of green wood as big as a telephone pole. Bost yelled, "Move!" and pulled me back as the crocodile man smashed a 5-foot-deep trench in the riverbank where I'd been standing. He bellowed, "Horace!" The last thing I wanted to do was say "here," but Horace spoke urgently in my mind. "Face him down. Sobek only understands strength. Do not let him grasp you, or he will pull you down and drown you." I swallowed my fear and yelled, "Sobek! You, weakling? How the heck are you?" Sobek bared his teeth. Maybe it was his version of a friendly smile. Probably not.
"That form does not serve you, Falcon God," he said. "I will snap you in half."
Next to me, Bast slipped her knives from her sleeves.
"Don't let him grasp you," she warned.
"Already got the memo," I told her. I was conscious of Hufu off to my right, slowly lugging Sadie uphill. I had to keep this green guy distracted, at least until they were safe.
"Sobek, god of, I'm guessing, crocodiles. Leave us in peace, or we'll destroy you."
"Good," Horace said. "Destroy is good."
Sobek roared with laughter.
"Your sense of humor has improved, Horace. You and your kitty will destroy me."
He turned his mucus-filmed eyes on Bast.
"What brings you to my realm, cat goddess? I thought you didn't like the water."
On the last word, he aimed his staff and shot forth a torrent of green water. Bast was too quick. She jumped and came down behind Sobek with her avatar fully formed, a massive, glowing, cat-headed warrior.
"Traitor!" Bast yelled. "Why do you side with chaos? Your duty is to the king."
"What king?" Sobek roared. "Ra? Ra is gone. Osiris is dead again, the weakling. And this boy child cannot restore the empire. There was a time I supported Horus, yes. But he has no strength in this form. He has no followers. Set offers power. Set offers fresh meat. I think I will start with godling flesh."
He turned on me and swung his staff. I rolled away from his strike, but his free hand shot out and grabbed me around the waist. I just wasn't quick enough. Bast tensed, preparing to launch herself at the enemy. But before she could, Sobek dropped his staff, grasped me with both massive hands, and dragged me into the water. The next thing I knew, I was drowning in the cold green murk. I couldn't see or breathe. I sank into the depths as Sobek's hands crushed the air out of my lungs.
"Now or never," Horace said. "Let me take control."
"No," I replied. "I'll die first." I found the thought strangely calming. If I was already dead, there was no point in being afraid. I might as well go down fighting. I focused my power and felt strength coursing through my body. I flexed my arms and felt Sobek's grip weaken. I summoned the avatar of the Hawk Warrior and was instantly encased in a glowing golden form as large as Sobek. I could just see him in the dark water, his slimy eyes wide with surprise. I broke his grip and headbutted him, breaking off a few of his teeth. Then I shot out of the water and landed on the riverbank next to Bast, who was so startled she almost slashed me.
"Thank Ra," she exclaimed.
"Yeah, I'm alive."
"No, I almost jumped in after you. I hate the water."
Then Sobek exploded out of the river, roaring in rage. Green blood oozed from one of his nostrils.
"You cannot defeat me!"
He held out his arms, which were raining perspiration.
"I am Lord of the Water. My sweat creates the rivers of the world."
Ew. I decided not to swim in rivers anymore. I glanced back, looking for Hufu and Sadie, but they were nowhere in sight. Hopefully Hufu had gotten Sadie to safety, or at least found a good place to hide. Sobek charged, and he brought the river with him. A massive wave smashed into me, toppling me to the ground, but Bast jumped and came down on Sobek's back in full avatar form. The weight hardly seemed to bother him. He tried to grab her without any luck. She slashed repeatedly at his arms, back, and neck, but his green skin seemed to heal as quickly as she could cut him. I struggled to my feet, which in avatar form is like trying to get up with a mattress strapped to your chest. Sobek finally managed to grab Bast and throw her off. She tumbled to a stop without getting hurt, but her blue aura was flickering. She was losing power. We played tag team with the crocodile god, stabbing and slashing, but the more we wounded him, the more enraged and powerful he seemed to get.
"More minions!" he shouted. "Come to me!"
That couldn't be good. Another round of giant crocs and we'd be dead. "Why don't we get minions?" I complained to Horace, but he didn't answer. I could feel him struggling to channel his power through me, trying to keep up our combat magic. Sobek's fist smashed into Bast, and she went flying again. This time, when she hit the ground, her avatar flickered off completely. I charged, trying to draw Sobek's attention. Unfortunately, it worked. Sobek turned and blasted me with water. While I was blind, he slapped me so hard I flew across the riverbank, tumbling through the reeds. My avatar collapsed. I sat up groggily and found Hufu and Sadie right next to me. Sadie still passed out and bleeding, Hufu desperately murmuring in baboon and stroking her forehead. Sobek stepped out of the water and grinned at me. Far downstream in the dim evening light, about a quarter of a mile away, I could see two wake lines in the river, coming toward us fast. Sobek's reinforcements. From the river, Bast yelled, "Carter, hurry! Get Sadie out of here!" Her face went pale with strain, and her cat warrior avatar appeared around her one more time. It was weak, though, barely substantial. "Don't!" I called. "You'll die!" I tried to summon the falcon warrior, but the effort made my insides burn with pain. I was out of power, and Horace's spirit was slumbering, completely spent.
"Go!" Bast yelled. "And tell your father I kept my promise."
"No!" She leaped at Sobek. The two grappled, Bast slashing furiously across his face while Sobek howled in pain. The two gods toppled into the water, and down they went. I ran to the riverbank. The river bubbled and frothed. Then a green explosion lit the entire length of the Rio Grande, and a small black and gold creature shot out of the river as if it had been tossed. It landed on the grass at my feet. A wet, unconscious, half-dead cat.
"Bast?"
I picked up the cat gingerly. It wore Bast's collar, but as I watched, the talisman of the goddess crumbled to dust. It wasn't Bast anymore. Only Muffin. Tears stung my eyes. Sobek had been defeated, forced back to the Duat or something, but there were still two wake lines coming toward us in the river, close enough now that I could see the monster's green backs and beady eyes. I cradled the cat against my chest and turned toward Hufu. "Come on, we have to..." I froze, because standing right behind Hufu and my sister, glaring at me, was a different crocodile. One that was pure white. "We're dead," I thought. And then, wait, a white crocodile? It opened its mouth and lunged, straight over me. I turned and saw it slam into the two other crocodiles, the giant green ones that had been about to kill me. "Philip?" I said in amazement, as the crocodiles thrashed and fought.
"Yes," said a man's voice.
I turned again and saw the impossible. Uncle Amos was kneeling next to Sadie, frowning as he examined her head wound. He looked up at me urgently.
"Philip will keep Sobek's minions busy, but not for long. Follow me now, and we have a slim chance of surviving."
31. I deliver a love note. I'm glad Carter told you that last bit, partly because I was unconscious when it happened, partly because I can't talk about what Bast did without going to pieces. But more on that later. I woke feeling as if someone had overinflated my head. My eyes weren't seeing the same things. Out of my left, I saw a baboon bum. Out of my right, my long-lost Uncle Amos. Naturally, I decided to focus on the right. "Amos?" He laid a cool cloth on my forehead.
"Rest, child. You had quite a concussion."
That, at least, I could believe. As my eyes began to focus, I saw we were outside, under a starry night sky. I was lying on a blanket, on what felt like soft sand. Hufu stood next to me, his colourful side a bit too close to my face. He was stirring a pot over a small fire, and whatever he was cooking smelled like burning tar.